All right, everybody, welcome to a belated Patreon Q&A. I can't apologize enough. Obviously, I've been away for a while, and then I thought it wasn't going to take as long to get back into streaming, and it just sort of has, and that just has left this really long gap in terms of like not being able to do live streams and not being able to do other bits and pieces. But hopefully we've turned the corner. I know that's not going to be much of a comfort for people that have been missing me on Twitch the last couple of months. It's been, I think, like 10 weeks since I've streamed live, and I'm going to be back working PGL events very soon. So I can only apologize and thank you for your patience and your continued support. But hopefully we've turned the corner. We can get back on camera, start doing some cool shit again. And as I've said, if you've been following Belly of the Beast, I'm going to roll up my sleeves and start really channeling in on doing more interesting content rather than just all of the esports stuff. This is going to be a Patreon Q&A for July and August. That's how far behind I am. It's just turned October at the time of recording this. And that means what I'm going to do, I'm going to just read all of the Patreon questions that are on the Discord. And then for September, even if you had one for September that I read in this one, everyone's just going to get another freebie. And I am going to stay on top of these now moving forward. It's really just been a hectic time. I mean, I just got back as well from like a holiday with my family. You know, after all the stuff that's been going on in the world, it was like, you know what? I need to reconnect. I went back to Wales, and you know, I was in North Wales. I was in the rural part of Wales. And it was just really nice, and it was really nice to kind of see the family again and everything. So we're here, we're clear. We're going to stay on top of it now. And once again, I cannot thank you enough. I know probably the people over on Patreon feel like they get bilked a little bit and don't get the best deal out of it. I've noticed some people have stopped there and come across to Patreon. How you choose to support me is entirely up to you. And as I've said to anyone, if at any point you feel I owe you something or I haven't delivered on a promise, then absolutely pull my card and tell me about that, and I will do everything I can to fix it. So we're going to start with this one from Jester. With the recent rise of Asian CS, where do you think they will be in the next few years? Personally, I'm not buying into the hype of Mongols being a title contender, and I think they are still too far away from the Mauses, Spirits, and Falcons of the world, not to mention miles away from Vitality. I also think Ty Lue's Fissure win is another in a long line of promising glimpses of what Chinese CS is capable of that will ultimately amount to a decidedly damp squib once people start taking them as a threat. So, look, on this note, I think we've got a lot of interesting stuff going on in World Counter-Strike right now. You know, principally, we've had the rise of kind of, you know, Russia and Kazakhstan and Ukraine. And those regions have been ripe for a long time to produce talent. They've been held back internationally because they can't really play online because of the big pings and all the problems they've had. And we've seen with, like, Furia, the rise of Molodoy. I myself was in Astana with PGL, and we saw how incredible the crowd was and how inspirational it was to see Molodoy do well on a big stage, no doubt creating future Molodoys. And it's a big country, and it's a big country that has been coming online, technologically speaking. You know, I joked about this when I was out there, but it is absolutely true. I think one of the dirtiest bits of propaganda I've ever sort of seen filter down into modern cinema is essentially what Sacha Baron Cohen did with Borat. Kazakhstan isn't like that. I'm not saying there aren't parts that aren't really rural and whatever you might want to say, but Astana was a modern city, and it had modern tech and modern and fans that are engaged with modern technological stuff and everything else, social media and all of that. And, you know, I even got recognized out there, which is mind-blowing to me. So for me, now that they've overcome like ping hurdles, internet's getting better, infrastructure's getting better, it's good to see Kazakhstan sort of start producing more and more players. And look, China hasn't had any of those problems, really. It's one of those regions that it is so big and so vast and so technologically engaged, they should have been producing way more talent than they actually did. It's just a matter of the game. Counter-Strike has never really been massively popular in China in the same way that it has in other parts of the world. What they've done in China now is, though, they've had a very big push on it. And there's good and there's bad that comes with that. Obviously, we know about how rife match fixing is. We just had another match fixing scandal that everyone's just kind of shrugged off and doesn't even talk about now. A former Rare Atom player, no less. And that's another concern moving forward that I genuinely believe you can probably point to any Chinese pro that's been playing for a while, and you're probably pointing at a match fixer. Whether or not you know about it, that's one thing. Whether or not they'll ever be held accountable, that's another thing. But it's certainly a problem in terms of, you know, if you ever wanted to export Chinese talent, for instance, would people want to take that risk? And so they're essentially landlocked due to geography, due to linguistics, due to concerns about, well, do we even want to dip into that region for recruitment? But the teams that they've got now have done really, really well, and they've come on leaps and bounds. They look exceptional. I think it's probably, we're going to see a group of Chinese players maybe bust out in the same way that Mongols did, probably 26, 27, you know, round about then. But to your point about Mongols, I'm not sold. I was recording an episode of The Double Swing with Yumi and King T, and we were talking about this. I'm not sold on them. I mean, they're currently ranked number one in the world. Nobody believes that, not even Mongols, by the way. And that's just what it looks like when you're in a post-era era of, you know, Vitality have fell off, who's going to fill the void? And so Mongols are good, don't get me wrong, they're an incredible story, but I don't think they're legit like a dynastic team. I don't think they're going to win lots of tournaments, even though they did get over the hump and finally win one worth talking about. All of which is to say, I think Asian CS is in a really good spot. It's actually further ahead, realistically speaking, than it should be. And certainly with the emergence of teams like Mongols and, you know, from, you know, a country that has never really struck you as a region that would historically throw up talent. And despite the country being so big, has an incredibly small talent pool to draw from. The fact that they've even had a team who is a legitimate top five team is an incredible story in and of itself. I think China is the real one that's been absent. And I just think we're there now. I think the appetite is there. I think we've seen Chinese pros learning English, understanding they can get fan bases in the West, and that will lead to lots of positive things for them. And certainly we're going to see more Asian tournaments that involve international teams. We're going to see ESL going back to Chengdu later in the year, where it's going to be live in front of a stadium crowd. The appetite for CS is growing, and that's a very, very good thing for the Chinese scene in general, and essentially for the global scene. You know, whatever you want to say about governments, et cetera, whatever you want to say about all of the problems they have with gambling and match fixing, at the end of the day, the esports scene is better with an engaged Chinese fan base. That's just the reality of it. So we've got here now, is there a specific song that you listen to in your youth, you old fraud, which deeply resonates with you and or invokes memories? Well, for me, I was always more of an album kid. I don't know if this is normal. I have no like frame of reference, so apologies if this is like a really obvious thing to say. But I was somebody that would just put on an album, just bump an album. And you know, once the album was on, you didn't really skip any of it. And that was always essentially as well how I judged how a good album was. Is there a song on there that like doesn't fit or you want to skip? You know, can you listen to it all the way through in it from start to finish without interruption? And so there's definitely, like, put it this way, if I was to pick a deep cut that no one really talks about now, it would probably be Trouble Gum by Therapy. Therapy are an Irish band. It's Therapy with a question mark. They're super slept on. People have like totally forgotten about them, but they were like being held up as like being at like the front end of like this pop punk revolution that was meant to be happening across the United Kingdom and Ireland. And I'm trying to think of other bands that kind of came out around that time. Ash was a big one that sort of came out at that time. I think they even toured with Therapy at one point. But anyway, Therapy did this album called Trouble Gum, and Trouble Gum just has some incredible songs on it. Like, they're all really easy to play, easy to listen to, easy to sing along to, fast, get you in, get you out. Not many of them are longer than 3 minutes. And that was just the energy that kind of you needed at the time. I mean, you know, probably if I was listening to stuff at one end of the spectrum, you know, I'm listening to Nine Inch Nails and early Deftones, and then at the other end of the spectrum, it's probably stuff like this, like Therapy, where it's a bit more up-tempo, but lyrically, it's very dark. You know, for example, like there's a song on the album called Femtex, which opens up with the line, "Masturbation saved my life." And so, you know, that album is just fucking jam-packed, wall-to-wall bangers. Obviously, I've talked about it before, Static Age by The Misfits. It doesn't miss. I mean, that is an album you just put it on and it just goes like a spinning top. It's just a whirling dervish of an album that never stops. Every song a banger, and really makes you lament the direction that the band went in with all of the infighting and what have you. So, I mean, look, probably if I had to pick something, though, a song that deeply resonates would probably be... it would probably be something off Deftones' first album. I'm just bringing the track list up here. It's Ferial is the last track. Probably that, because the Deftones, the first album, Adrenaline, that was basically my set. That was me and my first, like, proper long term girlfriend at university. That was our sex album. We used to put that on when we were having sex in our dorm. And so, obviously, the track listing there is essentially a measurement of performance, but also imbued with a lot of positive memories. And Ferial, I think, was like the last track, so it was like, okay, well, good, you know, we can get this over with now. I've done my manly duties. But yeah, that was like, I love that album for that reason. It's like being sort of cocooned away in a happier and simpler time before the complexities of adult life sort of, you know, kick the shit out of you. So yeah, Ferial by the Deftones. There you go. Listen to it. They're fantastic. Next. What's your go-to Indian curry recipe? You see, I mean, look, I'm pretty good with Indian food because, as regular listeners will know, obviously my grandmother was Indian. I was brought up around Indian cuisine and their family, and they taught me a lot about it. You know, I'm one of the few people that, like, you know, me and Blair, whenever we're talking about Indian food and Indian culture, you know, like, he's always surprised that, like, I might actually know a thing or two. Especially, you know, like the fights over who has the best garam masala, because I think to a lot of people, they don't realize what a garam masala is, how it's like a blend of spices that are meant to be unique to the household. Everyone has their own and stuff like that. And indeed, you know, my godmother's mother, she had her own too. And anyway, I do cook a lot of Indian food when I'm trying to cook, but I'm also massively hampered by the fact, like, almost all of my friends are vegetarian or vegan. And so what can I realistically cook? And unfortunately, what you're left with is I do throw down a pretty mean saag aloo, which is boring. It's certainly boring and not the spiciest dish, not the most complex. But I will say mine is restaurant standard. I'll stand on business on that. You know, I make it with fresh spinach and everything. It's like super cool. So yeah, probably that would be like, if I was trying to impress somebody and they happened to be like a vegetarian, I would knock that together. But obviously I can do all the classics, you know, and I understand the Indian spice gauge pretty well, pretty fly for a white guy. So, but that one, I can do that in my sleep. It's so baked in now, because whenever I cook Indian for my friends, that's a dish that has to get cooked for everybody, you know. Carve, now that we have the Ibiza final boss, now that the Ibiza final boss has been revealed to be from the Northeast, are you prepared to address the rumors? This is actually a member of the Lewis clan. Surely it's not too much of a coincidence that this boozy specimen appeared out of nowhere in some dodgy clubs with a historically strong hairline. So, look, I did catch the Ibiza final boss, and I'm still perplexed as to what it was all about. Like, I don't really understand what the premise of the joke was, like what the bit was. other than looking ridiculous. And trust me, I mean, you know, someone that's been to Ibiza and someone that was around working that circuit, you know, it was what you did when you were young. You went out to Spain. Ibiza was the happening place. You know, when I was young, you went to Ibiza or, you know, to Magaluf, or if you were a hipster, you went to Tenerife. I've certainly seen my fair share of ridiculous people. And I've also noticed, you know, there is this kind of new trend of people really going out and out with the just how blatant the cosmetic surgery is, and sort of how there's a subculture of younger people that don't seem to mind. They don't seem to mind the bleach white veneers. They think that's what teeth are supposed to look like. You know, they don't mind the unbelievable, like, you know, low hairlines or insane thick shocks of hair. With women, the tans just seem to be like crazier than anything I've ever seen before. Like these dark, like sword, like, I'm not trying to be flippant here, but you know, like some of them, it is, you could make a case for blackface. They're so dark and so, and when you know that, like, you know, you are white, you were born white, and yet you've made your skin this dark, it's actually crazy, especially when they're rocking the blonde hair with it as well. And I just see this like more and more, and I'm kind of like, well, you know, look, people like what they like and fashions and tastes change, but I have to assume the Ibiza final boss is like a joke. He's like he's a pastiche. He's like mocking those guys. I don't think any of the stuff he has is permanent. It looks like it's a costume, so I don't know. Now, obviously, I will also add, he was always going to be from the Northeast. Like, there's a certain type of confidence you have to walk around looking like that, even in jest. And put it this way, based on my experience, Northerners have that kind of like self-deprecating humor that they can do, that they'll happily do that for attention. And so it doesn't surprise me whatsoever that he's from the Northeast. I mean, if I had to say, I would expect Newcastle. But it's not like, you know, listen, I'm never going to pay a Macum a compliment. But, it, you know, the Macums are also pretty good. You know, on the crack levels, not the drug, but being funny. Macums are up there. You know, they're certainly got a better sense of humour than the average Londoner. So, you know, I mean, none of that surprises me whatsoever. Two questions here. For July and August, how do you guys pick categories for foreplay? Do the movies or categories usually come first? So that's a good question. And obviously, what we do is, it is a super complicated process. What we do is we get together on a call, usually to record another piece of content. And Monty will go, we need to choose our next arc. And when we put the podcast together, we literally threw out a bunch of arcs. Like, I was pretty adamant I wanted to start the show with cosmic horror because it was an excuse to review The Thing, and I love The Thing, and you know, we all love The Thing. It was a good, and it's a popular movie, and we thought it might get algorithmically captured. As a sidebar, what's ended up happening is, unfortunately, the growth on foreplay has kind of stunted a little bit, because when we looked at the metadata on the channel, it's all esports recommendations, even though it's a movie channel. And so what we've had to do is, this is why we changed it from Last Free Nation culture to Last Free Nation movies, because we're just trying to demonstrate that it is a movie channel as much as possible to the algorithm, because ultimately, the audience we're getting might be one or two new people find it, usually from a search, but most of it is the esports audience we already have, and not a lot of scope for growth in that, because you might like our esports opinions, you might not give a fuck about what we have to say about movies, and equally, you might not really care about esports anymore, but you know us from esports, so you'll watch our movie content, and we want it to kind of expand and flourish a little bit more beyond that. So anyway, one of the ways you can do this is obviously with a strong arc, a strong theme. And so whenever anything's like popular, you know, like, well, or tragic, as cynical as it sounds, like, you know, we did the Gene Hackman arc because Gene Hackman died, and Gene Hackman's a fantastic actor. You know, spoiler, we've already got the Robert Redford arc kind of like mapped out of the movies we're going to do, and I think it'll be the one after the one we're recording at the moment, which isn't even the one you're watching at the moment. We have a tendency to record them in clusters because we're all traveling. We release one every Sunday, but they're recorded a lot in advance. And so this is why, you know, you get people like say, wow, why does Richard Lewis look like this in this one? And it's like, well, because it's 2 months old, you know? It's like, or it might be, you know, like, wow, we didn't make any reference to this. Like when we did All the President's Men, you know, when we recorded that, Robert Redford was still very much alive. So when it comes to picking the arcs, we just toss stuff out. You know, we say something that interests us. And basically, we've all known each other a while, right? We've all known each other a long time. So we just give each other like that grace and go, okay, you know, Duncan picked the psychedelic horror one. I'm always game, anything to do with horror, I'll watch any horror. But that was very much Duncan, and he was like, and Duncan also has like some very strong, like, when he comes up with an arc, he always has one film he strongly wants to do in that arc. And so generally what we'll do is, if it's an arc that you pick, you might pick two of the movies, and then the other guys go one and one. Or if it's an arc like, you know, that like there's some stuff that's formative. Like, for instance, with the journalism stuff, you have to do All the President's Men. You have to. You can't really get away with it. Get away from it. You have to do The Insider. You have to. Can't really get away from it. You know, it's just one of those things. I said, like, let's not do Spotlight, because a lot of the movies we picked are just journalists essentially huffing their own farts in cinematic form. And so I was like, let's not do that. So anyway, in the end, what we do is we just pick something out that we think is going to be interesting or something that might be topical. You know, we've got another horror arc coming for October, which is all recorded. We've got a one-off special as well. We're coming up with new ways that we can extend the Foreplay brand, you know, so we can like maybe watch a movie if it comes out, you know, because we all watched 28 Years Later and then we can't really do an episode on it. And it's like, we probably should have done an episode. We probably should have just hit record and talked about it. We all had a lot of opinions about that film. But yeah, just when it comes to arc selection, it's pretty much like, you know, what type of topic will resonate with our audience, be interesting, and has a wide range of films in it. And obviously, I'm super happy with the one that we picked for this October. It's a horror arc. I won't spoil it because I think it's going to be announced soon, probably on this Sunday. And it's just like, it's really got some depth and some breadth to it. You can pick a lot of interesting films. And part of what's interesting about putting the podcast together is essentially arguing over what stays and what goes. For me, I just wish it was doing a little bit better, if I'm just being candid. I wish that it was just, you know, somehow trending in the algorithm. But we're having to tear down all of the esports fucking, you know, stanchion that's around what I think is a pretty good movie podcast. The next one is, as a baseball fan, have you seen Banana Ball? Do you think it's a fad or has any staying power? First of all, is it what I think it is? Oh, no. This isn't what I thought of at all. So I have no idea, but it sounds like it's essentially the Harlem Globetrotters for baseball. I mean, the Harlem Globetrotters endured in basketball because ultimately it was, you know, essentially like it was comedy, but it was like showcasing skills. It had like a little narrative storyline in there, you know, with the Globetrotters having to do well, and you knew each of the players and each of the talent, and they all had their own backstory. So if it's like that, I can see it attracting a large audience. It's just ultimately, it is a little bit silly. Now, I'll say, put it this way, if it is like what I think it is, just based on a cursory glance, that's actually still not as harmful as like what YouTube boxing has done to real boxing. That's like way, you know, way worse. And so if it attracts people to the sport, because baseball is essentially a failing sport, people aren't watching as much as they used to, people aren't playing as much as they used to, other sports seem to be eclipsing it, then fair enough, because I actually like baseball, and you know, it's one of those things where it's like I actually like baseball, and I wish it was doing a bit better. It's probably a fad, but sometimes fads aren't bad. Right. Jaden asks, hey, Mr. Lewis Big Dog, I hope you're doing well. Out of all the sounds in the universe, what are your top three? So you're asking me top three sounds out of all the sounds in the universe. Okay, I'll try. This is so ridiculously complex a question. I'm going to try and do it as best as I can. I love the sound of a theremin, you know, that kind of sound. They're great, and I associate that with like 1950s B movies and horror, and you know, lots of great stuff there. What else do I like? I like the sound of rain. I like the sound of rain against a window, maybe with some light thunder just rumbling in the background. There's nothing like the sound of rain and a storm to sort of fall asleep to if you're an insomniac. I recommend go to one of the ASMR channels and just get rainfall for, you know, however long it's going to be, and listen to that. It definitely helps. And then, I don't know, what would the last one be? It's cliche, I'll say laughter. I think there's a very healing and restorative power about when someone's genuinely laughing. I mean, like, you know, like, for instance, it's you notice it when, you know how kids, little babies, will just find something so outrageously funny because it's essentially the first time their brain has had to process what it is. So that, and it's, you know, they've got enough of a personality to understand what funny is. And it's like, that's just a great sound, like listening to a little kid like genuinely cracking up at something that's like really funny to them, whatever it might be. And then that goes right the way through to, you know, when you're an adult. You know, it's laughter's like when someone's genuinely cracking up, when someone's genuinely having a good time and genuinely finds something funny, there's just something to be said for that. And it's, you know, it's infectious for a reason. So there you go. Who knew I was a romantic the whole time? Second question, what are your favorite minerals but not rocks? This is kind of interesting. I used to be one of those like nerdy kids. I know, big surprise. I used to be one of those nerdy kids when I was growing up, and I did have like mineral sets, you know, like fucking Hank out of Breaking Bad. And I used to be into all of that, and I used to know that. You know, I could tell you what was what. And I used to know about igneous and sedimentary rocks and all of this stuff. And obviously that's all just fell out of my brain now as I've got older, because it's not really useful. So I really don't know how to answer this. I mean, like, as a kid, fucking magnesium was... Is that a mineral? It's not a mineral, is it? It's cool, whatever the fuck it is. It must be a mineral. Is it a mineral? I don't know. Anyway, when they do that shit where they throw it in the water... And, you know, and it explodes. It's a chemical. I'm going to look it up now. Is magnesium a mineral? That's a fucking good question. Yeah, it's an essential mineral. There you go. Fuck it then, magnesium. Well, wait, hang on. That's talking about supplements. Well, whatever. Look, listen, I'm not a man of science, as you can probably tell. All I know is when you throw that shit in the water and it fucking explodes, that's cool. There you go. Right, Carv. He asks, will you be renewing your Newcastle United membership now that it was recently revealed that being visible and taking the bag was an acceptable form of protest following the acquisition of Evo Series by the Saudi state? Perhaps you would also like to issue an apology to old Carve, who spent the last 3 years crying that NUFC weren't being sport-washed enough, when in fact I was the wokest of them all the entire time. And then he's done the fingernails painting and probably calling me sweaty. Look, I'm not gonna lie to you, I've been watching the Newcastle games. I am ashamed to say, been watching Newcastle play. I really wish I wouldn't succumb to the lure to do that, but it's just been, you know, there's so many like interesting things going on at the club, and you know, I had to check out what Volta Marda was like and all this other stuff, and you know, so yeah, I've watched pretty much every Newcastle game so far this season, and you know, you can oh, I'm watching it, I pirate them or whatever. It doesn't really excuse kind of any support for the club. It's just like, where do you channel that energy? And I know everyone says Gateshead is where it should be going, but it's a tough one. It's been hard, but I mean, it's been a weird season. The whole Alexander Isak drama, just what a shower of shit. And it's like, I knew this was going to happen, by the way. When they signed him, I knew he wasn't going to walk into the Liverpool team. I knew that. I mean, you know, it could be another Andy Carroll style move where, you know, Liverpool have got to get their man. They get their man, they bet him in gently, and then he never lives up to what he did at Newcastle, where we had an entire system that was about feeding Isak the ball, like, fucking, you know, 10 times a game into a goal scoring position. That's what we did. That was how we set it up. And so is he going to get that at Liverpool, or is he going to be expected to create a bit more of his own? Who knows? Like, I think he's not going to find it easy to go to Liverpool. It's a tough club to go to, and unless you hit the ground running, and we've seen with some of their other signings, they're finding it hard. So we will see. I mean, I've already said I don't think Liverpool win the Prem this year. I won't say who I did say was going to win the Prem. I won't commit that to video just yet, except to I will go back on the Discord and pull it up if I turn out to be right. But if you're in the Football Channel, you know. But because it's aged terribly since, I've put a curse on them. But it won't be Arsenal, it won't be Liverpool. You know, so there you go. That's where I'm at with it. I think a lot of people really just went all in and went, well, Liverpool have made the signings. I mean, what does that mean? Like, yeah, you've signed good players. Like, that's part of it, but not all of it. And it's like, I think Slot's a good manager, sure, but they got flaws there. You know, they got flaws, we've already seen some of them this season. So, but yeah, I kind of got lured back in when the Isak drama was happening, and then I was like, well, okay. You know, I'm going to watch the games. I just wanted to see how we did without him. Walter Marder fucking hit the ground running. He's looking great. Really good signing, even though we're getting mugged off for paying £69 million for him. And we managed to retain a lot of the talent that we had. We were unlucky with Wissa getting injured. So, you know, I'm watching them with one eye, basically. My one good eye. And I know I shouldn't, but I mean, put it this way, at this point, we've got, like, Saudi are buying video games, they're paying comedians to go out there and pretend everything's fine, and, you know, it's Saudi's world, and we just fucking live in it right now. Jester, again, he asks, what are your opinions of Ian Hislop? Now, for those who don't know who Ian Hislop is, Ian Hislop is the guy that, I don't want to say did he found Private Eye, but he was certainly the editor of Private Eye. He certainly couldn't have founded Private Eye. I think that's been around longer than he's been alive. But Private Eye is basically a satirical magazine in Britain that really, you know, writes about, you know, all of our politicians and all the ridiculous things that they say. And he has been in that job since like the 80s. And that's kind of what I knew him from. Then I think he was a writer for Spitting Image, which was this puppet satire show that I really, really, really liked as a kid. I used to stay up. It used to be on at 10. It used to be on after the 10 o'clock news. So I used to have to stay up very late. I used to have to fight tooth and nail with my mum to be allowed to stay up to watch it. And it was just really funny and really excoriating in terms of how it talked about these political figures and celebrities, and did it with puppets, and then everyone goes, oh, well, it's okay because it's puppets, you know. And then obviously he kind of really emerged as being an institution with Have I Got News For You, which he did with, it was the original team, was him, Angus Deaton and Paul Merton. And it really worked. It really, really worked because, you know, you've got the surreal of Paul Merton. Paul Merton is like a surrealist comic, essentially. He had his own show and everything else. You have Ian Hislop, who's very much got his finger on the pulse of political happenings. And then Angus Deaton was a bit of a sort of cynical, hot, you know, tough kind of guy in the middle. And unfortunately, it all came unstitched because I think Angus Deaton got caught. I think it was cocaine and prostitutes, which, by the way, like, it's just so tame. Like, who gives a fuck? But the episode they did after that scandal broke out was legendary. And then I think Angus Deaton he got fired after that. But they did do an episode, if I remember, where Ian and Paul were like, anything going on with you, Angus? You been up to anything this weekend? It's one of the funniest but also most uncomfortable episodes of British comedy I've ever seen. Anyway, Ian Hislop, he's a lefty. He's a massive, massive lefty. He's been banging on about Tories all of his life. He's got no truck for the Tories. But then again, who does? Except Lossie. And he's a good guy, you know. I really like him. I think he's someone whose heart is very much in the right place, and he also doesn't shy away. You know, when he has like a guest on the show who's been embroiled in a scandal or took a hypocritical position or says something that's outrageous, he will just literally, he'll just tear them to pieces. And he's not even afraid. He's been there. He's been in front of Parliament. He's been in at these panels that they have, these committees, these hearings, and he's always telling them straight. I mean, particularly the one I remember was when the News of the World got shut down, that fucking disgusting rag that had been spying on people illegally. They were hacking into phones, and they'd even done it with a dead girl. I think it was it Millie Dowler? Anyway, a girl had been murdered and they'd hacked into her phone, and then they'd changed it so it looked like somebody had been on there and deleted things, and it gave the family false hope that maybe the daughter was still alive. And Ian Hislop was right at the heart of that, talking about how, you know, the media was out of control and there was no fucking guardrails and tabloid journalism had plumbed new depths. So yeah, he's a good egg, man. I like him. He's been pretty much ever present in my life since I sort of came online politically. And whether I'm reading him or observing his comedy, I mean, me and him are pretty similarly aligned, bar one or two. You know, like I say, I probably don't go hard enough on certain topics that I think we would probably disagree upon. But other than that, we're pretty much in there, you know, we're in the same ballpark. So, I mean, I'll also add, it's not like he doesn't bang on Labour, and particularly New Labour, the Blairites, and whatever the hell Labour is now under Starmer. He is very critical. Been critical of Europe. He wasn't a Brexiteer, but he recognised some of the problems with the European Union and our kind of relationship in it. So I think he's a smart dude, a cool dude. I like him. I got a lot of time for him. Next one. It seems like no matter what type of content you make or what you do in your career, morons always follow you in some capacity. What was it about BTN that made them come out in such force? It always seemed like dramas that started by something said on the show would blow up bigger than if it had originated from somewhere else, not to mention the necessity to take the VOD down to stop the out-of-context clips. I think basically what it was, if you look at what By the Numbers did primarily, it was like, at that time, there wasn't really any irreverent podcasts, you know, like for Counter-Strike. There just wasn't. There was podcasts, there was like shows, there was talk shows, but when By the Numbers first came out, and then when we brought it back, there just hadn't been a show that was designed to be irreverent, to come in and attack cheap, lazy narratives and to go after shit fan bases and things like this. And we were one of the first podcasts that called out the Brazilian fan base and said, look, you know, and this is back in 2015, whenever it was, you know, we were like, this fan base is going to be a problem if people don't, like, say, we're going to have to put some behavioural standards down. Look what we ended up with. Look where we ended up with the rise of Gaules and everything. We were totally on point about that. We called out just a lot of bullshit around influencers and popular players, and you know, and obviously fandoms are meant just a cluster of mentally ill people. That's what fandoms essentially are, and they will go after anybody that calls out things that they like and care about. And so what we ended up with was essentially every week we'd say something. It was usually Duncan would say the thing that would trigger everybody, even though it was certainly within the purview of the type of thing you would say on a podcast. And I don't think anyone would think much of it now. You know, you have to understand, Duncan and I, we were watching American sports podcasts. We were watching, you know, stuff like Inside the NBA and watching what they were doing. We were listening to Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith. And we were like, this, and keep in mind, this is, you know, ahead of E-League. We were like, look, this is the direction esports needs to go. This is what drives engagement. And it did. You know, we were the biggest podcast by miles for a long, long time. And even when we came back and brought it around the second time, that was before, you know, there was no Talking Counter. There was no HLTV confirmed. We were carrying the torch. And ultimately, the way we wanted to do things was, we're not going to sit there and be like, oh, let's get a guest on and let's have them give their side of things. It was like, no, they played bad. We're going to say so. This fan base is dog shit. We're going to say so. Fox fans are delusional. We're going to say so. We're going to say what we want because we've earned the right. We've given our adult life to this game. So we're going to say what we want to say. And if you don't like it, you know, go for it. But then it just, the last year of the show's existence, it just got so disproportionately stupid. You know, no more live streaming because we've got people literally recording the VOD because they hope somebody slips up and says something. And by the way, I'm not just talking about fans. I'm talking about actual YouTubers doing this. You know, we've got, and then sending out of context clips to people to say, can you believe he said this on the show? Can you believe it? And like, you know, people are like, who cares, you know? We had that, we had, you know, like just insane, like constant mass flagging of my Twitch channel, which I'm not even using it at the moment, am I? But, constant flagging of that, constant mass reporting, my Twitch manager telling me we've had another like set of mass reports again. Sam having to go through and listen to the VOD twice, editing out anything that could be misconstrued or clipped and then uploaded somewhere. Like the workload for what we got out of it just wasn't worth it anymore. And as I said, the last drama that happened with, you know, everyone's favorite was just so disproportionately stupid with, you know, his 5 videos about you and why you're an asshole and all these references in other videos and all. And it's just like all what we initially said was so disproportionate to the reaction. It was just like, what even is the point of this? So that's essentially what killed it. Like when we got to the day of the week, we were going to record the show, even doing it not live, I couldn't be arsed. I was just like, fuck this. There's no fun in this. And so, yeah, I think it was just essentially any retarded fandom in Counter-Strike watched the show, not in good faith, but just to be outraged by anything we said and then disproportionately react to it. And in an era of, you know, discords and social media organization, we were just getting absolutely panned. So it just wasn't worth it in the end. Okay, next. It is the late 90s, early 2000s era of trance and techno ever going to be overtaken by the new generation, as it seems that these days all they do is remix the good old bangers and classics? I mean, look, maybe that is just a genre of music that just dies and never comes back and is only referenced in, you know, DJ sets and sampling and remixes and re-releases, because that's happened many, many times. You know, a genre doesn't have a right to life. You know, I think about, like, you know, when I was coming through, I listened to lots of different stuff, and particularly when I went to university, you know, I got into breakbeat. I was a breakbeat DJ, and, you know, I had all my Mo Wax and Ninja Tune and, you know, all these labels and that I would just pull stuff from and you know, mix and scratch it up, and I loved all that stuff. No one's really turntablism isn't really a thing anymore, like, you know, Technic scratching tournaments. It's just like they're still going, but they are super niche. And for a period, they were like mainstream. You know, like everyone had Introducing by DJ Shadow. You know, everyone has that album, right? But it's like, did you get the private press? You know, like, did you? You know what I'm saying? And like, so it never, you know, it kind of like dissipated out. And then to be even more niche, Acid House, that's gone. Acid House essentially morphed into like rave. No one does rave anymore. Is Gabba still a thing? I don't fucking know. And so you've got all these, like, you know, and like, by the way, people still, like, the Prodigy, people are always going to reference the Prodigy. They might reference their latest stuff. They might not, you know, reference like Music for the Jilted Generation or whatever. But at the end of the day, like, rave and the bands that came out of that rave, I mean, even just like more obscure stuff like Alternate and that kind of thing. It's like nobody remembers any of that stuff. Nobody remembers rave. It was like something that happened. You had to be there. And then occasionally, wacky and witty and a DJ with a good grasp of musical history will like just bring a sample back, and you all of a sudden you'll hear the fucking drum beat from fucking Poison, like boom, 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 and you'll be like, oh shit, remember that? Fuck. You know, and that's just how that goes. And it doesn't mean the genre's back. You know, grime's kind of dead. You know, I love grime. Like, that was like my thing. You know, I fucking love grime. That's gone. Garage, that's gone. You know, like, some stuff it's just here today and gone tomorrow, unfortunately. And there's not really much you can do about it, except if you love it, if you love that particular sound, you keep it alive, you know? Like, I still got all of my classic, like, breakbeat records and albums and stuff, and I still bump them. I don't give a fuck. You can play them to people or put them on when your friends around, and it's like, oof, what's this, you know? And they want to play like whatever else, but like, fuck it, you know, this is what I like, this is what I grew up with. So yeah, and I mean, as well as all of the other stuff, like I say, these were always like niche genres. It's probably why they don't last, you know? Like, rock isn't going anywhere. You know, rap isn't going anywhere, but like these little subgenres, they can die. They can like last like a year. You know, they can be fads and they just go. So I don't know. Maybe trance and techno. Maybe it's just never coming back, brother. You just have to love what we had. Another Patreon question here: do you play any musical instruments? If not, what would you like to play? Well, this is a funny question. I was deemed to be a musical child when I was younger. How it used to work in the working class schools is you would basically get told, oh, you know, sit this aptitude test, and it would be like, you know, beep, beep, boop. Which one was the highest? Which one was the lowest? You know, shit like that. And anyway, I like aced it. I aced the test, and I was one of the few boys that did. It seemed to be girls that like had musical aptitude in my school. I think I was like the only guy actually that stuck it out. And I've told a story before. They gave me a violin. They told me I could play drums. I wanted to be like Animal from the fucking Muppets and smash up a drum kit. They told me I could have drums, and then it turned out all they had was violins. And then they said, you know, and this is like a lot of things in life. They tell you one thing and then you get another. They said, if you do well at violin, we'll let you have a drum kit. If you can prove you've got the discipline. And it's like, they ain't even the same fucking thing. What are you talking about? And violin was dog shit. I hated it. I never practiced. I used to go to the, you know, it was good for getting out of one like lesson every week or whatever it was, and we would go, and then you would have like a, you know, however long of a music lesson with, and it was just me and a bunch of girls playing violin. It was like really isolating and horrible. I used to get the piss took out of me. I couldn't have done fucking much to avoid that, but in the end, I didn't stick it at violin. And then they said, oh, okay, you can change your instrument, because I said I was going to quit. And they said, like, okay, so I get my drums now, right? And they went, well, and then it was saxophone. So I played alto sax for like 2 years. And again, didn't practice. That is even harder than violin, It's so physically demanding and so hard to even get a consistent sound out of it when you're first starting. And so much to learn. I was just like, nah, this ain't for me. So I didn't touch instruments again until I got a little bit older, and then I was in and out of punk bands. And so obviously when you're in a punk band, you just, yeah, you know, I played in this one band. Oh, fuck, what they called? It was something really dog shit. It was like Royal Jelly Dolphins or something. I can't fucking remember. It was just some dog shit. I was in so many shit punk bands that would, like, it would be members of other bands who'd fallen out with their bands, and they would make a new band, and then they'd be like, yeah, Rich, come and sing in this band. This is going to be the shit. You remember, like, Nick? You remember Nick from, like, the fucking Gaping Anuses? Oh, yeah, yeah, I love Nick from the Gaping Anuses. Yeah, well, he's gonna be the drummer for us, man, and then we got Alistair from, like, you know, and it would just be like, oh, okay, cool, you know, because we were all playing on this, like, local circuit, you know? And so these bands would come together, we'd have like three or four jam sessions, we'd be playing pubs within, like, you know, before we were ready for any of that shit, we'd be playing pubs, you know, 90% covers, right, like, you know, and we wrote this one, yeah, and doing that, and then basically the band would break up. Like, you know, yeah, fuck you, I'm going back to the Gaping Anuses, yeah, we never wanted you anyway. And it's just, that was what was going on. So I was in one, the Royal Jelly Dolphins band, or whatever the fuck it was called. The gimmick was we would swap instruments between every song. So it was like a three-piece. I did get to play drums. I got to play drums on stage. And basically, like, listen, I am not good at drums. I don't want you to think that because we were swapping instruments, we're all super sick. I was a root note bassist, a fucking drop D chord guitarist, and a very, very basic drummer. Because if all you have to do is, like, if that's all you have to do, you can do it. Anybody can do that. I'm more musical than the average person, but I'm not musically talented in any way, shape, or form. And there it is. That's all of the questions in the channel. Certainly, people have been skipping out and not leaving the questions. I'll throw a reminder in there again for everybody, because I know I've been terrible with this, and it's just unacceptable, and I hope you can all forgive me. Obviously, I've had a lot on my plate, way more than I thought I was going to put on it, and hopefully we can all get back to, like, regular streams, we can get caught up on all the esports news. I got some Belly of the Beast content being edited by Griff now that, like, we essentially recorded off stream. And yeah, as always, thanks to all the patrons for all the support, all the people who subscribe on Twitch who haven't been getting value for money lately, all the people who subscribe on YouTube. I'll pick up September's questions real quick, and thanks so much for your support and attention. See you next time.